We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
One thing the legislature did get passed during the regular session, Republican-dominated legislature signed off by a large margin, sweeping changes that'll trim jail sentences and expand parole opportunities to offenders in jail, and analysts predict will reduce the overall jail population by 10% over a decade. Some of the hardcore conservative Republicans, and I shouldn't say that, but those more to the right, were against it. Greg Glaude joins us right now, manager of state initiatives for Right on Crime, senior policy analyst for the Center for Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Tommy. Sorry for that long...
No. I was just going to say, your business card must be 5x8.
Yeah, and like I always say, the longer the title, the less you do.
Yes. That's why I don't... Anyway. Yeah. Tell me about... I don't even know where we start with this. I guess it's based on older prisoners, Greg?
Some of it is based on older prisoners. I mean, it really covers the entire system. So we're looking at everything from, you know, pretrial into sentencing, into how you handle prisoners while they're in prison, to how they're getting handled afterwards. You know, I think in Louisiana, 95% of prisoners are going to get out at some point. And so what they try to do is look at, while you're in prison, using that time effectively while getting educational programs, vocational treatment, so when you come out, you're a better person than when you came in.
So is this a situation where they have two sides basically on side of the balance sheet? One person is saying they committed, they broke the law, they deserve to be punished, put them in jail in a cell with no TV or whatever and let them think about what they did. And other people say, like you, that no, because if you do that, you're going to have a high rate of recidivism. And if they don't have any skills, then what are they going to do when they get out other than resort to crime?
Exactly. And, you know, we're a very conservative policy foundation, and so is Right on Crime. And, you know, we're in the notion of, you know, you lock them up and throw away the key. That's what we did in Texas, and that's where we're stationed here. But when we started looking at the system, we said, are we actually getting in return on investment that we're supposed to be? Are we actually increasing public safety by locking up and throwing the key? And what we've seen in Texas and a lot of other, you know, really conservative states like South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, when you actually decrease certain sentences, put alternatives to incarceration, remove these barriers to successful reentry, you actually see the crime rates go down while imprisonment goes down. And so you're saving money, you're making the public safer, and you're actually getting better people coming out of the prison sentence. So
we're going to get to the dollars in a minute.
Sure.
We're talking to Greg Glaude, manager of the state initiatives for Right on Crime, senior policy analyst for the Center for Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, about shortening sentences overall, Greg, or is this only for certain crimes?
There are certain crimes that were reduced. So in Louisiana, there's things called mandatory minimums for certain offenses. Essentially what they are is that the judge has no discretion to kind of serve a lower sentence than what the minimum is.
And that's kind of like the three strikes you're out thing, where a guy has two, or a woman has two arrests before and convictions, maybe for misdemeanor crimes, and then they get locked up for possession of pot or what have you, and then they wind up being sentenced to life prison because there is no flexibility in the three strikes you're out thing?
Right, that's one of the things. And so, but some of them in Louisiana, so for example, if you had a second offense, there are certain minimum penalties that you had to do, and those are for nonviolent crimes as well, so like simple possession of drugs, lower trafficking of drugs, things like that. So Louisiana actually went much further and, you know, criminalized at a higher level a lot of offenses that weren't being criminalized at that level in neighboring states like Texas, like, you know, Georgia, South Carolina, and Mississippi. And those in, you know, those places have similar crime rates, but less incarceration. And so what you're saying is, just throwing people in prison obviously is not lowering crime rates. So let's look at the system and get better returns on it.
Jamie in New Orleans, hi, you're on WWL. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, in 1969, I was in high school in Massachusetts, and I sold, my friend brought over a cop, and I sold him $20 worth of LSD. And I know that was wrong, and I totally agree with that. And I was given 10 years, first offense, and I had no record or anything. And the week before my trial, Nixon had declared war on drug pushers.
With Elvis, I think, right?
Yeah. And so anyway, I wound up going to, you know, in my cell block was the Boston Strangler, every type of major criminal you can even imagine.
So you went to federal prison, Jim?
No, I went to Massachusetts.
Walpole, oh, you were there, I guess.
Walpole State Prison. Yeah. And my two best friends were lifers. And we would, you know, cook Spam on a little burner in front of a ventilator every night. And it was like we watched, you know, Mork and Mindy and All in the Family. Mm-hmm. And it was more like college years. It was so different then than it is today. And I'd been looking for him for, well, it started about 5 years ago on social media, because I certainly figured they'd be out by now. And I could never find them. And then I saw a program on PBS about the Boston Strangler and found out and decided to call the prison. And much to my dismay, they were still there.
Wow.
So I started writing them. I've been I'm a sort of a habitual letter writer, so I started writing them, and I write them every day, and They've found God. And
how old are they now, Jamie?
Well, they're 73.
Wow. Hey,
and they've been there 50 years.
Let me get his take on that. Greg, what do you think about that? LSD back? Well, I don't know. Jamie, what were they in prison for?
They're in prison for first degree, and one of them for first degree murder and the other one for second degree murder.
Wow, that's not selling LSD. Greg, what would you say there? 73? Been in for a long time, first-degree murder, very serious charge, capital offense in a lot of states, and then second-degree murder.
Oh, no, certainly when you look at the package that Louisiana put in, you know, this was focused on nonviolent offenders. So, you know, from our standpoint, sometimes the best tax dollars spent are the ones, you know, locking people up that, you know, society should be afraid of. And, you know, I don't know the circumstances of those cases, but in a lot of violent offenses, you know, keeping people away from society is the best way to increase public safety. There's no doubt about it. But when you're looking at potentially 10 years for first-time offense for selling LSD, you know, you have to start looking. And I appreciate, you know, the caller saying, you know, I take personal responsibility for my actions. And we agree with that. It's a pillar of conservative principles to take personal responsibility. It sounds like he's doing well now. But, you know, does he have to be in there for 10 years? Do you really feel that that was good? And, you know, what was he doing while he was in prison? Was he learning a vocation? Was he getting skills that he needed? You know, we're paying 10 years at probably about $40,000 to $50,000 a year to house this person who has a nonviolent offense, when this person could be generating, you know, tax dollars for society. So you really have to take a balanced approach when you're looking at nonviolent towards violent offenses.
But
so,
let me go on the other side of the table here, Greg. You know, first degree murder. He's 73 now. Jamie, he's been incarcerated since when? He was how old?
1967.
And tell me the years on that.
It was 50 years.
50 years. So, and I'm not taking up for any first-degree murder or anything else. Jamie, give me the circumstances real quick.
We never talked about it. It was...
So you don't know why or how or anything else?
I don't
know
why or how of either case.
Gotcha. But assuming, Greg, it was, you know, the worst of the worst, just picking somebody out and killing them for the sake of killing somebody, at 73... Do you look at it as punishment? Do you look at it as, you know, somebody's got to answer for this person's death, and those people still might have living relatives from the time, or even if not, it's part of the family's legacy. Do you look at it as punishment, or do you look at it as 73? Do you have any statistics on how many 73-year-olds that get out and start murdering again, or is it a matter of we're keeping that person locked up for nothing?
You're punishing the person. That's one of the goals, obviously, of the correction system. So, you know, 73-year-olds, pretty much anyone kind of ages out of crime at around like 40 or 50. Mm-hmm. So obviously at this point, he's probably not the threat to society that we believe that he is. But let's take the assumption that this is, you know, one of the worst crimes. It, like you said, it just picked him out of nowhere, killed him. You know, at some point, you know, the criminal justice system has to be about punishment as well. And so that might be an appropriate sentence of that. in that regard. One of the big things is allowing judges discretion to make that determination. You know, we elect them, we put them in those positions, and a lot of the laws that were going on in Louisiana didn't allow for that kind of wiggle room to say, well, this was this was a case where this person got involved in something, they were 16, they were riddled on drug abuse, you know, something went wrong and they killed someone, and does that person have to be there until 73? Or is this, you know, just a cold-blooded violent killer, and that person, 73 or, you know, to the rest of their life might be appropriate? One of the other things that we've looked at is, you know, when people have debilitating diseases and, you know, they essentially have, you know, untreatable cancer or something like that, keeping them in the Department of Corrections sometimes is not the most appropriate choice when they're actually literally bedridden.
Well, it's costly too, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that can cost you $150,000, $200,000 a year. And so one of the things that the Justice Reform Package did in Louisiana was looked at those people with those high medical costs at an older age and said, why don't we put them on a medical furlough, essentially taking them out of the prison, allowing the federal government to pay for their medical costs rather than Louisiana taxpayers.
What kind of feedback are you getting, Greg, from families, victims of somebody like the guy that called in before, first-degree murder, convicted of first-degree murder is what I'm trying to say, being in there for 50 years, I think he said. Anyway, the guy's 73 right now. Generally speaking, from victims' families, do they feel as though, you know what, the guy's done his time, let him out, or do they feel as though, nope, I want him to die in prison?
You know, it's a little bit all over the place, but there's a lot of victims groups that, you know, their goals are to reform the system to ensure what happened to, you know, their families doesn't happen to other people, and they realize that, you know, locking people up and throwing away the key is not the way to get there. And so obviously you're going to have certain ones, like, you know, if you're the victim of a person who's been murdered, I understand why you'd want someone to stay the rest of their life behind bars, and, you know, that might be the appropriate sentence for that. But when you're looking at people who potentially were, you know, robbed, or, you know, their storefront got destroyed, or, you know, something stolen from their business, most of the time individuals say, you know, I understand that this person did something wrong, they need to be punished, but I don't want them to, you know, have their entire life destroyed, because when that happens, you know, they can't get proper job, they can't get proper housing, you know, they're going to resort back to crime. And so we don't want that. And most individuals, and when we've pulled things like that, and, you know, we ask if someone's been a victim of crime, the majority of people say, you know, we'd rather focus our money on treatment rather than just throwing someone in jail.
In terms of a deterrent to crime and long sentences, you know, we hear often that in the inner city, and the police department tells us that if somebody's willing to maybe give up their lives, or they don't care about the person they're shooting's lives or their own, I don't know how you could say a long sentence is a deterrent. I'm certainly not saying they shouldn't go to jail. I just wonder how, if you're going to make something a deterrent that works, an efficient deterrent, how in the world do you do that?
Right. And so, you know, a lot of the research that's coming out now, it's not the length of sentence, but it's the actual swiftness. It's the certainty of the sentence and the severity of it. So when you look at, for example, if someone's on probation, they fail a drug test. A lot of times you'll hear cops say, well, we don't do anything about that first one. And then you go, what about the second one? Probably won't do anything. What about the third? Probably won't anything. Well, if it gets to the fourth or fifth, we normally, you know, bring him in and then he'll get the rest of his sentence. You know, then he'll have to spend 2-3 years. And it's like, well, you know, everyone has children, and if you let someone get off the hook for something 2, 3, 4 times, they're probably going to continue to do that behavior. So what you need to do is nip it in the bud early. Give them commensurate punishment for that. You know, maybe you spend a weekend in jail for the first time. Maybe you spend a week in jail for the second time. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is when you have, you know, certain sentences, swift sentences, and you don't have these things going on, and people don't feel that they're going to get away with things, that's when you really start seeing good results on people breaking that cycle of recidivism.
All right, I got to ask you a couple of quick questions, and we're in a lightning round, Greg, so if sure. You could give me some brief answers. Private prisons, I don't know why this came about, and the idea that encouraging people for profit to imprison as many people as they can was a good idea. And do private prisons actually want recidivism because they have more customers? I hate to say it then.
So, you know, we normally don't take too big of a stance on either private or public prisons, and I understand why people have certain concerns that, you know, this might possibly incentivize, you know, leaving people in there for longer and for a long period of time. But, you know, the free market generally is much more innovative. So as you've seen a lot of bad things come out of private prisons here and there, you know, you've seen a lot of innovative movements where they don't have to wait on the legislature to make decisions on how to ensure people can get better results in their prison, how to make them safer, things like that. So they're able to definitely, you know, be much more creative in how they do that. And you've seen some great, great evidence-based practice come out of private prisons. And also,
Greg?
Like, yeah.
Let me just jump in. I got a question I'd like to get an answer in 30 seconds if we can, because they're screaming at me in the control room. In terms of drug offenses and minor misdemeanor drug offenses, Jeff Sessions seems as though he's indicating he wants local authorities to crack down on that. What does your organization think about that?
Well, when you're looking at low-level drug offenses, you know, people that don't have, you know, violence in their history, you know, prison does not do what you want it to do. Generally, they actually learn to be a better criminal when they go into prison, when they're a lower offender, rather than, you know, being a better person when they come out. And so, you know, luckily the states, you know, they have the majority of the individuals in prison. So conservative states have been leading the way on finding alternatives to incarceration because they realize that jail just doesn't work for these low-level offenders that probably have an addiction issue, probably aren't coming from a good neighborhood, things like that, that can be amended rather than just throwing someone in prison for a long time where essentially you just throw their life away.
Greg, thank you. Hopefully we'll talk to you again. Greg
Blod,
Manager of State Initiatives for Right on Crime, Senior Policy Analyst for the Center for Effective Justice at the Texas Public Policy Foundation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.